The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
I'm Frank Holland, and you're listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. Our show is live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern. Listen in. We are turning our attention to Washington, where House Speaker Mike Johnson defied a far-right faction of Republicans this weekend by supporting a vote on several foreign aid packages that included $60 billion for Ukraine. Now, Johnson may be fighting for his job as those lawmakers, they step up a push to push him out. NBC's Bree Jackson joins us now from D.C. with the very latest on this story. Bree, good morning.
Good morning, Frank. So Rep. Marjorie Taylor Greene signaled that she will move forward with an effort to remove House Speaker Mike Johnson from his role.
On this vote, the yeas are 311 and the nays are 112. The bill is passed.
The U.S. is one step closer to delivering much-needed aid to help Ukraine fend off Russian aggression after the House passed a $95 billion aid package Saturday. A move praised by Ukrainian President Zelensky in an exclusive interview on Meet the Press.
First of all, I'd like to say thanks to the Congress for the bipartisan support. And I'd like to say thanks to Speaker Johnson and President Biden. Indeed, it is so important, this support from the United States of America.
The measure, which provides money for Israel, Taiwan, and more than $60 billion for Ukraine, received pushback from a small group of Republicans. They were upset that Speaker Johnson worked across party lines to get the job done.
I think every American in this country should be furious.
Johnson now faces the threat of being removed from the speakership by members of his own party.
Today, the pressure cooker is at a very high local maximum because he has taken away every bit of leverage we had to do something on the border by sending $100 billion overseas.
But Democrats and some Republicans are vowing to vote for Johnson to remain speaker.
When the motion to vacate is threatened every week in the Congress, that is being abused. And I think we need to fix that.
House Speaker Johnson is standing firm, saying he has a job to do and he's not going anywhere.
And meanwhile, the Senate is expected to vote on that foreign aid package as soon as Tuesday. Frank.
All right, Bree Jackson, live in D.C. Bree, always great to see you. Thank you. All right, time now to talk more about the investor impact of the U.S. aid packages for Ukraine, Israel, and Asia. Tina Fordham is the founder and geopolitical strategist at Fordham Global Foresight and former chief global political analyst at Citi, joining me right here on set in London. And Tina, it is great to see you in person. So thank you so much for being here.
Likewise. Great to have you in London.
All right. So a natural place to pick up is that foreign aid package, specifically that $60 billion to Ukraine. Yep. You were on one time. You went meme on us. People can go on Facebook and see this themselves. You said F around and find out when it comes to Ukraine, when that funding was stalled. What do you think about now when we see the passage over the weekend?
Thanks for reminding me of that. That was completely off the cuff, but I think it's appropriate. And I have to say, Frank, today is a good day. It wasn't looking like the U.S. would pass this aid package. I understand that it's not popular with a lot of House Republicans, but a majority of Americans are supportive. A majority of Congress is supportive. And this isn't just about, helping out good causes. This is about the geostrategic calculus that the U.S. and our allies is operating in. So this is a major breakthrough, and I have a smile on my face.
Okay. I want to go to a bigger part of the global economy right now, the oil market, something we've been watching very closely. Oil prices, they spiked on news that Iran will respond to Israel's attack. But I'm looking since that attack. I'm actually seeing oil prices down about 3% since then. If you look at WTI or Brent, does the oil market, does this signal what the situation really is in your mind, or is it detached from the possible risk in this geopolitical situation that could, in a lot of people's minds escalate?
Well, the oil price is probably the most traditional indicator of geopolitical risk in the markets. And it's been extraordinary that we have seen so little in terms of an oil price risk premium reflected since this uptick in geopolitical risk in the Middle East. But that reflects a really important change, and that is the advent of U.S. energy independence. Back in 1974, when we had conflicts in the Middle East, the revolution in Iran happening a little bit after that, that triggered a U.S. recession. But that transmission mechanism is not the same anymore. But that's not to say that geopolitics isn't having an impact on the investment environment.
So are you saying the risk isn't priced in?
I'm saying it's not reflected through the oil price channel. We see it in gold. We see it in risk appetite. I mean, now, obviously, right. we're back to risk on. We see it in sentiment. We see it in treasury yields.
Got it.
And also there is a feedback loop into, you know, electoral sentiment.
All right. So you have clients in not only the U.S., but overseas as well. And I thought this was interesting. Most of your clients, they're already convinced that this election in the U.S. at least is over, that Trump's going to win. But if you look at the latest NBC poll, it's really neck and neck. Trump with a lead, but it's well within the margin of error. When you're talking to your clients about the U.S. election, what are you telling them? And how should investors view this, along with all the other things going on, as yeah. we mentioned, Middle East tensions, also the passing of funding to Ukraine and other foreign countries?
Well, we've never had so many kind of front row, you know, geopolitical spectacles at once. We've got also tensions in the South China Sea, the China and the Philippines. Middle East, you know, there hasn't been a peace deal. There's just been a subsiding of that risk. Plus Russia and Ukraine. And despite the U.S. Military aid, Russia's heading for a summer offensive and has been pounding hard on Ukrainian territory. So that's all still live.
Bottom line, does it matter to investors who wins this election? Is there a significant difference when it comes to portfolio management or asset classes you should be invested in?
It depends on where you are. I think U.S. investors are pretty sanguine about the possibility of a Trump 2.0. It is a different story in the whole rest of the world, not just Europe, but Asia, where the U.S. has security allies. This consistently surprises American investors that I talk to who think the race is wide open and don't think a Trump 2.0 would necessarily be so bad for their portfolios. It's the security relationship that really matters to Europe, to the Middle East as well, which still relies on, and not just right. Israel, and Asia. So there's a lot to play for. You mentioned the statistical tie. This is what I tell clients. You know, we have a typically 3 to 5 percentage point margin of error. It's not about the national polls. Americans don't get focused on this anyway. They're exhausted by politics. Until about September, this has a lot of room to fluctuate.
All right, so right now you're saying, it sounds like you're saying safest bets or safe haven assets like gold. The rest, we have to wait and see. Right there, I thought you were going to say F around and find out again. I really did think.
I'm trying to be better behaved.
You're always well behaved. By the way, to your point, NBC News says we're seeing the lowest level of interest in the election in 20 years.
Yes.
Yeah.
The double haters don't like either.
Tina Fordham, leaving it on that note. Really great to see you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, opening statement set to begin in former President Trump's New York hush money criminal trial. We have the full details when Worldwide Exchange returns. Stay with us.
Dogs are an important part of our lives, and keeping them protected is a top priority, especially against nasty parasites. That's why you gotta check out NexGard Plus, afoxolaner, moxidectin, and pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection that kills fleas and ticks, prevents heartworm disease, plus it treats and controls roundworms and hookworms. That's a whole lot of protection packed into a delicious beef-flavored, soft chew designed to make monthly dosing easy and enjoyable. So the next time you're at the vet, ask about NexGard Plus Chews. They're the one-and-done monthly parasite protection you want for your dog. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive.
What does it mean to be rich? Is it having more stories to share or time to give? Is it being able to keep your loved ones close or travel somewhere far away? At Edward Jones, we believe the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Your dedicated financial advisor will take a comprehensive approach to your financial strategy to help support what truly matters to you. EdwardJones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Turn our attention to soft commodities and cocoa. That's, of course, The key ingredient in chocolate is trading at an all-time high after a dramatic and somewhat mysterious rally spiking nearly 300% over the last year. We're going to get to that mystery in just a moment. Major chocolate makers, they have raised their prices. A lot of attention on those hikes around Easter in recent weeks. But still, U.S. chocolate demand increased about 9% from Q4 to Q1, according to data from companies like Hershey's, Mondelez, and others. The primary reason for the spike is a crop shortfall in West Africa, where just about three quarters of global supply has grown in two seasons. The spring harvest, which is underway right now, is forecast to be at least 10% lower, according to the International Cocoa Organization. I spoke with the executive director, who will be presenting at their annual meeting in Brussels this week. He cited aging farmers, plant disease, El Nino, and climate change as just some of the reasons for that shortfall. However, there really isn't a clear cause, and that's raising concerns about the fall harvest that is twice as large. And that mystery is what traders say are keeping prices elevated.
The major issue today is I can't tell you exactly, I cannot put my finger on the exact reason why the crops have failed in the way that they have this season. And as I can't be categoric about the reasons that they failed, that means I can't be categoric about whether it's going to happen again or not.
So last week, Hershey's was downgraded ahead of upcoming earnings on concerns about the margin impact of rising cocoa prices. City out with a note calling it the tightest cocoa market in 50 years. Other chocolate producers also trading lower, as you can see here on the chart. With no clear answers about cocoa supply, commodity traders are also seeing a major bull market and another soft commodity, coffee. It's risen 25% over the last month. Much less mystery there. It's due to a shortage that hit crops in Vietnam caused by less rain and higher temperatures. But important to note, the coffee market is literally three times bigger. All right, time for a check on some of this morning's other headlines. NBC's Francis Rivera in New York with the very latest rising coffee prices. Francis, I'm sure something that concerns you and most of our audience.
I know, right? And you got to get a jump start our other ways. All right. But for now, let's get started with our headlines, Frank. Within just a matter of hours, opening arguments will begin in the criminal hush money trial of Donald Trump. The former president has pleaded not guilty to 34 counts of falsifying business records. Mr. Trump has said he is willing to testify in this case. If convicted, he faces up to 4 years in prison. Now to an ongoing campus controversy here in New York City. At Columbia University, protests for Palestinian rights continue despite mass arrests and evictions of activist students of last week. A campus rabbi warned Orthodox Jewish students to stay away from the school for the time being. The university president has now said all classes today will be remote to, quote, de-escalate the rancor. While Jewish students do report feelings unsafe at Columbia, protesters insist they are merely objecting to the Israeli war in Gaza. 50,000 people lined up along Pennsylvania Avenue in D.C. this weekend to watch the iconic boulevard turn into a Formula One racetrack. The pinnacle event of the weekend featured retired Red Bull driver David Coulthard, who sped between Capitol Hill and the White House in a car that can hit a cool 200 miles per hour. It's part of a series of events in U.S. cities designed to bring the lightning-fast cars closer to the fast-growing American fan base. All right, from Monday morning, you're up to date. Frank, send it back to you.
All right. Francis, thank you very much for that. All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, adding to Tesla's wall of worry, where our next guest says the stock could fall another 42% this year. We will be right back with that story and much more on Worldwide Exchange.
If you have kids or pets, you know stains and odors in your carpet and upholstery are inevitable, but the experts at ChemDry can help. ChemDry removes odors and stubborn stains by sending millions of carbonating bubbles deep within your carpet. ChemDry lifts dirt, urine, and stains to the surface to then be extracted away, giving you a cleaner and healthier home. Call 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com to connect with your local ChemDry and learn about special offers in your area. That's 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com today.
And welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. I am Frank Holland coming to you from CNBC London. Let's get you ready for the trading day ahead. We're going to pick up the half an hour with a check of U.S. stock futures. With the S&P 500 on pace for its biggest monthly drop since December of 2022. But right now, you can see futures are strongly in the green. Looks like the Dow is hitting its highs of the morning, looking like it would open up about 160 points higher. The NASDAQ up just about a half a percent. You can see the S&P firmly in the green as well. This after what was a very rough week for Wall Street. That saw the S&P fall more than 3% and post its worst week since March of 2023. Also, its third down week in a row. It was even worse for tech and the NASDAQ, falling more than 5.5% last week, its worst week since November of 2022. NASDAQ now riding a four-week losing streak. Sliding stocks coming on the heels of popping bond yields. We're going to take a quick look at treasuries right now. We always start with the benchmark right now at 4.65. So the 10-year yield, that's risen about 40 basis points since the start of April, putting some pressure on the equity market. We're also looking at oil this morning, coming off its worst week since February. Take a look right now. We continue to see oil under some pressure right now. Looks like WTI is trading at about $82.70 a barrel, easing off of its lows of earlier today, down about 0.5%. Similar story for Brent crude, down 0.75%, trading at about $86.65 a barrel. Okay, that's your setup. Now we want to turn our attention to tech and the sector that's set to take center stage this week as four of the Mag 7, they get set to report their results. We're talking Meta, Alphabet, and Microsoft. And the stakes, they couldn't even be higher after what was a really ugly few days for tech last week that saw the sector falling more than 7%, having its worst week since March of 2020, all the way back to the start of the pandemic. So ahead of the open, 29 of the NASDAQ 100 stocks are now 20% or more from their 52-week high. 76 are more than 10% from their 52-week high in correction territory. And look at some of the biggest pullbacks within the space. We're going to start with chipmaker AMD, off more than 35% from its high. Intel off 33%. Adobe and Palo Alto off 27%. Nvidia, huge run up for the last year, but off 22% in bear market territory from its most recent high. Joining me now, James Chalkmaak, Clockwise Capital Partner. James, good morning. It is good to have you here.
Good morning, Frank.
So I want to talk to you about earnings season coming up. We're hitting on some of these stocks that are well off of their highs. How important is earnings season, not only for the market, but specifically for tech? FactSet set out with a report saying when you look at five of the Mag 7 stocks, their earnings year over year are supposed to be more than 60% higher. If you look at the rest of the S&P 495, actually an earnings decline by 6%. So just lay it out for us.
Yeah, I think what we saw over the last week, you know, we had a couple of bellwethers reporting, you know, Taiwan Semi reported, Netflix reported. And I think what we saw was that our estimates pretty much got ahead of themselves. Well, not so much estimates, I should say, but more so expectations. The estimates largely came in line, if not slightly better in many of those cases. But at the end of the day, it was a sell the news kind of situation, which showed that a lot of what we've seen actually as of late has been more multiple expansion driven and less so higher estimate revision driven, which means that, you know, which poses the question if that trend is sustainable. Now, the one good thing I would say is that I think we had such a huge reset of expectations on Friday, where basically the floor fell out from under us, that, you know, that does pose possibly a better omen for this coming week with four of the Mag 7 reporting.
Okay. So you're saying a lot of this is due to multiple expansion. We're in a higher for longer environment right now. We just hit on where the 10-year is trading at about 4.6%. So one thing, though, I thought these Mag 7 stocks, they were supposed to be kind of resistant, if not completely immune to this higher for longer environment because they have such strong cash balances. Why are we seeing those stocks under pressure right now?
Yeah, I mean, just take Netflix, for example. You had the multiple go from about 4 to 5 times sales to about 8 times sales over this period. Now, they have been raising estimates, but at the same time, the multiple has been expanding at just as fast as a rate, if not faster. So we've come into a position where the estimates and the expectations had gotten slightly ahead of themselves, where people presume that those earnings beats could be maintained at those previous rates. That being said, you know, that does not appear to be the case because now we're on the other side of the mean reversion where those healthy growth numbers, those insanely aggressive growth numbers that we've seen over the last couple of quarters are starting to come down. Then you add the geopolitical overhang and you add the Fed overhang with the higher for longer. You know, that's not a good recipe for,
Saying it's valuation in a much more volatile environment than we had at the start of the year and a lot less certainty about those rate cuts. You put it all together, it's a big issue for these tech stocks. I was speaking to a managing director of an investment bank recently here in Europe. They said that clients, they're not selling off their tech positions, but they are nibbling at more cyclical sectors like industrials and even non-cyclical sectors like healthcare. Are you seeing a similar interest that people, they don't want to get out of tech, but they want to kind of broaden their exposure?
Yeah, I think you have to be in tech. There's no, the tech is the future. AI is coming, the productivity boom is coming, and you know there's nothing to stop this. So you have to be there. Now, at the same time, do you carry the same kind of weights that you used to? No. I mean, we've been cutting our positions in our top weights, whether it be NVIDIA, Microsoft, Meta. We've been cutting all those systematically over the last month and moving into things like utilities, like gold, like aerospace and defense, just because of all the things that we just talked about. So we've been trimming.
But are you
those
making
positions.
Big bets, or like this managing director told me, are you just nibbling?
I mean, 3 to 5% of our portfolio is in each of those new buckets. So it's not tiny, but it's not massive.
Understood. James, stick with us. We got a lot more to talk to you about in just a second, but we're going to stick with tech right now. And that new bill to potentially ban TikTok right here in the U.S., the measure clearing the House over the weekend, raising the pressure on the company's owner, ByteDance. Our Emily Wilkins joins us now with what's next for that legislation. Emily, good morning.
Good morning, Frank. Well, yeah, the huge package passed the House this weekend. It included that $95 billion foreign aid bill for Ukraine and Israel and the Indo-Pacific. And attached to that was that measure that could lead to TikTok being banned in the U.S. Now, the entire bill now goes to the Senate, which is expected to pass the measure. They've already approved a lot of the foreign aid funding. And under the bill, TikTok would be forced to divest from parent company ByteDance in as little as 9 months, although it could be up to a year if the president provides an extension. Now, the House has now twice overwhelmingly voted for TikTok to divest, and the latest version of the bill has the support from a key senator, Maria Cantwell, the chair of the committee overseeing TikTok. TikTok has lobbied against the legislation, of course, spending over $4.5 million in advertisements opposing the bill in recent months, according to data from Ad Impact. CEO Shouzi Chu also said that the company will exercise their legal rights, and some lawmakers like Congressman Ro Khanna think they have a good case to make. Here's what he said on ABC's This Week.
I don't think it's going to pass First Amendment scrutiny because I think there are less restrictive alternatives. We could have made it a crime to transfer Americans' data to an adversarial foreign nation or foreign state interference. But to just ban 170 million Americans who are engaged in speech and livelihood.
A TikTok spokesperson said in a statement that the bill would, quote, trample the free speech rights of 170 million Americans, devastate 7 million businesses, and shutter a platform that contributes $24 billion to the U.S. economy annually. The Senate is scheduled to vote on Tuesday, and Frank, we, of course, will be keeping a very close eye on how that's panning out.
Right. So, Emily, stick with us. I want to go back to James Chacmok. James, I want to get your reaction to the House passing a possible TikTok ban. I mean, how do you view this? What does it mean for the broader tech sector? What does this mean for TikTok?
Well, I mean, if it happens, obviously it's great for all the advertising platforms here domiciled in the United States. But I honestly don't think that they're going to ban it outright. I think that if it does, you know, come to fruition, what they're trying to accomplish with this ban, with ultimately a forced sale in the best case scenario, then, you know, some entity will likely buy it. I highly doubt that you're going to see one of the mega platforms buy it. So, I'm not too worried about it. And I think that competition will likely continue for the Metas and Alphabets of the world.
All right. So, Emily, just back over to you. Odds of passage in the Senate, any sense of how realistic it is for this bill to pass?
I mean, at this point, it does look like it's pretty good. I mean, it's hard to say. Of course, there is some opposition. Some senators who, like Congressman Khanna, have serious concerns about First Amendment rights, have concerns about this being a slippery slope. But the really sort of drumbeat that we've seen throughout Congress is that there are issues with TikTok being connected to parent company ByteDance. You've heard a lot of lawmakers say, look, TikTok is fine. We want TikTok to stay. We just need to make sure that that tie between TikTok and the CCP is completely severed. And so that's what they've really been pushing for there. It has bipartisan support. The fact that Maria Cantwell, she, you know, initially got the House bill and she's like, all right, we might make some changes. We need to look into things. For her to come out last week and say, okay, the House has amended the bill. They've made the divestment time longer. And now I approve it. I think that was a huge step forward in actually getting this bill done.
All right, Emily Wilkins, James Chacmok, thank you both. Appreciate it as always. All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, more bumps in the road for Tesla, from fresh price cuts to new vehicle recalls. We talked to one analyst about what, if anything, this EV maker can do to get itself back on track. Stay with us. Much more Worldwide Exchange coming up in just a moment. All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. This morning, we are watching shares of Tesla. They're under pressure once again. You can see they're down almost 2.5% after shedding $76 billion in market value last week as the single worst stock loser of the Mag 7. A sagging stock price, not the only worry for Tesla investors this morning, as Tesla fires off another salvo in the EV price war, cutting prices by nearly $2,000 just across the board in countries like China, Germany, and more, including the U.S. Also slashing its full self-driving software price by more than a third to $8,000 in the U.S. This follows the company's largest round of layoffs last week and now scrapped weekend trip to India in what's seen as one of Tesla's key growth markets. For more, let's bring in Craig Irwin, Roth MKM Senior Research Analyst. Craig, good morning. Good to have you here.
Morning, Frank.
All right. I want to get your reaction to these price cuts. The price cuts in the U.S., also in China, they include the Model Y, the most popular EV in the United States. What do you make of these price cuts?
Oh, man. You know, these are painful, right? It's going to be painful for Tesla to endure these. We're going to see more rounds of price cuts after this. They're going to do everything they can to reinvigorate the sales velocity, right? When you're declining, you know, 8.5% year over year, that's not good in a growth market. So this is a very important year for the creation of the EV market, right? EVs are inevitable. These price cuts are going to make EVs highly compelling to the consumer, but we've got to get past this, right? It's going to be a tough year for Tesla. We've been saying that for a while. It's definitely not getting any better right now.
So it's not getting any better right now. That kind of speaks to your price target of $85. That's a 40% decline from where Tesla shares are trading right now. But you're kind of sending me some mixed signals. You're saying that the price cut's going to make the cars more attractive, so that could possibly boost deliveries. The real issue might be margin, but this is a company that a lot of people, I know you're not one of them, but a lot of people say is an AI play, and really the money's going to be made in the robo-taxi and other things down the line.
Yeah, so the bulls on the stock, they look at, you know, the AI and they look at robotics, right? So the whole thing of the robo-taxi, right, we're not going to get a robo-taxi on 8.8. We're going to get a cyber-taxi. It's going to be Cybertruck Light. It may have FSD in it, but this is not going to be level 4, level 4.5 ADAS, right? It's not going to be able to take you to the grocery store or bring you to grandma's while you play video games in the back seat, right? This is going to be a minor iteration of what's already out there. Robotics, I mean, Boston Dynamics absolutely crushes Tesla. Musk was making fun of their robot this last week. You know, there's other ways to invest in robotics. Tesla's a great company, but they make great cars and need to focus on selling more great cars.
All right. So in your mind, it's a car company. It's not a software company that makes cars. It sounds like you're saying it's firmly a car company. I want to get to some other headlines. Last week, laying off 10% of its workforce, still shares closed down 10% compared over to the Mag 7 last week. And now deciding to postpone that trip to India. What do you make of both of those? I mean, they seem like signs of trouble. Seems like things are not quite going Elon Musk's way.
Yeah, the headcount reduction is reactionary, right? This shows, you know, that they were not anticipating this year to be as difficult as it is, because the last several years they've really been adding, you know, quite a few people, right? 10% is a big cut. India, you know, their worst strategic bungles over the last, you know, decade have been not going into India and not pushing forward with the mini car, or the Model 2, as some people like to call it. You know, that was on the table in 2019, and they you know, I'm hearing that they had a bunch of reasons, but it was a strategic bungle. India is an essential market. You know, they need a supply chain there, and my understanding is that's the challenge for Tesla. You know, how do you get a China-like supply chain in India? You have to build it. So it's going to take years for them to see the same level.
You're saying skipping this trip's a big deal.
It is.
So skipping this trip a big deal or not as?
It is a big deal. This is why we see Tesla actually looking for plant locations in Thailand. It's a big deal.
All right, Craig Irwin, we're going to We're going to leave the conversation there. Your price target on Tesla, $85, about a 40% decline from where we are right now. About a 40% decline from where we are right now. Craig Irwin with the correction, man. Always great to see you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, coming up here at Worldwide Exchange, a new bullish call on one streaming player and more potential gains on top of the nearly 50% jump so far this year. We're going to show you what this name is from our mystery chart that's coming up right after this break. Stay with us. All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. It's time now for your morning call sheet. We start with Morgan Stanley. It's out with a price target increase on Spotify, moving it from $270 to $350 with a bull case target of $450. Morgan Stanley cites what it calls a highly aligned music industry focused on increasing monetization for the entire supply chain. It adds audiobooks, video, and leveraging AI presents other opportunities for the streaming company. Shares of Spotify up almost 1%. Morgan Stanley also out with a price target cut on Apple, moving it to $210 per share. It says while it expects Apple to slightly top expectations with its next earnings report, it expects revenue guidance for the current quarter will fall below expectations. Shares of Apple, however, up about 0.5% in the pre-market. And Bank of America naming NVIDIA one of its top picks despite the recent selling. It says despite some crowding, chipmaker stocks exposed to U.S. hyperscalers remain the best area. But it adds that NVIDIA may remain volatile until its next earnings report later next month. Shares of NVIDIA right now in the pre-market rebounding big, up just about 2.5%. All right, ahead, the one word that every investor needs to know today, plus a critical week for the markets with earnings ramping up, where our next guest is calling on investors to hold the line despite recent selling. Much more Worldwide Exchange coming up after this. Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. It is time now for your WEX wrap-up. Workers at a Volkswagen factory in Tennessee voting to join the United Auto Workers, a first for Southern non-union auto plants. The UAW has struggled to unionize employees from states like Texas, Ohio, and Indiana since its inception. The Wall Street Journal says deal talks between Salesforce and Informatica have now stalled. Salesforce was reportedly considering buying Informatica for $10 billion in what would have been one of Salesforce's largest acquisitions. You can see shares of Salesforce moving higher. Informatica under some pressure, down more than 6%. We're also watching the price of Bitcoin following the completion of its long-awaited halving on Friday. JP Morgan says Bitcoin is in overbought territory and could decline in the near term after surging to a record high. Right now, Bitcoin trading at about $65,890. And number one WNBA draft pick Caitlin Clark reportedly set to sign an 8-year deal with Nike worth $28 million. The race to tie Clark to a shoe contract ranks as one of the most competitive in the history of women's basketball. Very excited about Caitlin Clark's potential to play in three Olympics over the next 8 years. All right, here's what to watch in the week ahead. The business week for earnings with four of the Mag 7 and about a third of the S&P 500 due out. Outside of earnings, key factors to watch for investors include the latest look at GDP and the Fed's favorite inflation gauge, PCE, coming up later in the week. Plus, we get the latest policy decision from the Bank of Japan. All right, stocks looking to hit the reset button with the S&P and the NASDAQ extending their multi-week losing streak. Taking a look at futures, looking right now like they're hitting their highs of the morning. Looks like the Dow would open up close to their highs in the morning, up about 150 points higher. The S&P and the NASDAQ also firmly in the green. Let's bring in Joanne Feeney, partner and portfolio manager at Advisors Capital Management. Joanne, good morning. Good to see you.
Good morning, Frank.
All right, as we see futures rebounding from last week's sell-off, I want to get a sense of how you see the day shaping up. What's your WEX word of the day?
WEX word of the day is resilience, Frank. I mean, given what's happened over the last few weeks, I think investors need to recognize that markets are volatile. This is one of those times when it's important to keep their eye firmly on the long run potential of the companies that they own in their portfolios. And so a lot of ways to play and to become resilient. One of them is by holding good companies which pay a dividend perhaps, or which have strong secular growth characteristics.
Okay. I want to get to your picks in just a minute, but I want to bounce something off you. Trivera Research out with a note yesterday that I think is going to resonate with a lot of people, maybe even with you. They said, in part, we think the sell-off is likely to be short-lived in the end. We would root for the Fed to do nothing for a sustained period. No actions, the bull case. That means that the economy is fine and that financial conditions are not materially tightening. Agree or disagree?
Yeah, we've been saying most of this year, most of last year, that it was premature for the market to think the Fed was going to do any rate cuts. The labor market was too strong. Labor was still being added. Consumer demand was strong. There was still too much pressure on inflation. And that remains our case, is that we shouldn't expect the Fed to cut anytime soon. But that doesn't necessarily mean that things are bad for equities. In fact, equities and companies are selling into a very strong U.S. economy, likely to be a little bit less strong this year as consumers run through some of those savings as hiring slows down. But ultimately, it's still a pretty solid market for companies.
All right, so you say it's a pretty solid market for companies. You actually gave us some picks that, in your mind, will protect from some downside volatility or just volatility in general. They include McDonald's, Raytheon, and AbbVie. One thing that kind of resonated with me is the dividend here. Each of them has at least a 2% dividend, AbbVie with a 3.5% dividend. Is that the idea right now? You want to lock in definite gains either through, I would guess, bond yields or either dividends?
Yeah, you know, for some of our clients, especially the ones that are into retirement, right, they look to a portfolio to deliver dividends. And, you know, we can do that at, say, twice the market rate. And that enables folks to really live through these cycles. And so you look at those particular picks. You've got Raytheon helping to protect against geopolitical risks. You've got McDonald's, which helps to prevent against a weaker consumer because people still go to McDonald's. And then you've got AbbVie, which is a nice combination of traditional pharmaceutical, but also the optional pharma that comes from, you know, the cosmetics that they sell. So the dividend yield's attractive, okay, and the diversification is valuable.
All right, Joanne Feeney, it is great to have you here. Your picks for us today, AbbVie, McDonald's, and Raytheon, thanks for being here. All right, taking a look at futures. They are stronger across the board in the green solid. Looks like the Dow would open up about 160 points higher. That does it for us. You've been listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. You can always catch us live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern.
If you have kids or pets, you know stains and odors in your carpet and upholstery are inevitable. But the experts at ChemDry can help. ChemDry removes odors and stubborn stains by sending millions of carbonating bubbles deep within your carpet. ChemDry lifts dirt, urine, and stains to the surface to then be extracted away, giving you a cleaner and healthier home. Call 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com to connect with your local ChemDry and learn about special offers in your area. That's 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com today.